Opinions expressed in this program are for general information purposes only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual or any specific security. It is only intended to provide education about the financial industry. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult your financial advisor prior to investing. Any past performance discussed during this program is no guarantee of future results. Any indices referenced for comparison are unmanaged and cannot be invested into directly. As always, please remember investing involves risk and possible loss of principal capital. Please seek advice from a licensed professional. Bulwark Capital Management is an investment advisor representative of Clear Creek Financial Management, a registered investment advisor.
Welcome to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham on AM 770 KTTH. Whether it's preservation of capital or an aggressive growth strategy, every investor needs a clearly defined risk profile. Know Your Risk Radio is brought to you by Bulwark Capital Management, helping families navigate the ever-changing and often treacherous financial markets. Know Your Risk Radio starts now. Here's your host, Zach Abraham.
Well, I hope you're ready. I hope you're all ready for the most scintillating hour of finance radio. See, even, you know, you got a really corny catchphrase when even your producer's laughing at you as you're saying it. he's trying to build up my confidence here. That false flattery. You got to love it. Anyway, great to be back. Feel like it's been a lot longer since we've been on the show, but I guess we did a show like it's actually sooner than normal, right? Because we're actually recording on a Thursday. So I want to get out in front of this. I cannot be held responsible for what happens tomorrow or what happens after we're done recording the show. I'm flying blind here, people. And I need you to, you know, cut me some slack. But anyway, a lot going on. As always, we're going to start with the market update. And then I'm kind of feeling, you know, I was kind of in the mood for a history lesson. I read this really, I'm a history buff. Love it. And the reason we're recording on Thursday instead of Friday, as is usual, is because the wife and I are heading out of town tomorrow, getting out of the snow, heading to Mexico for 6 nights. No kids. Love those kids. Love them to death. But love my bride, too, and excited to, I think it's like the longest we've been away without the kids in, we did 4 nights somewhere. Anyway, it's been years. So we're pumped. Anyway, going to miss the kids horribly. Nah, we'll miss them. But you guys know how it is. I sound like a bad parent, but absence makes the heart grow fonder. You know, so anyway, so we got that to look forward to, and I'm you know, not a bad time to be getting out of here, huh? And Snowmageddon, I'm hoping you guys all survive Snowmageddon. I had a blast. Remember, Darren, we were joking around about how watch there's going to be like an inch, you know, because you always get faked out, you know, but this delivered. This, as a matter of fact, I've lived here my entire life, and I can only think about one or two times where we had anywhere close to that much snow. Got to 14 inches on the back patio where we were. Maybe there's a little bit of a drift, but I picked a purposefully flat spot. I wanted good numbers. I want good data. 14 inches. Incredible. We had a great time. We sledded and we pulled the kids on we had the ATV out there on the street, pulling the kids up and down the street on the sleds. Great time. Anyway, I hope you guys all enjoyed it. I hope you're safe, but let's get into it. So I was telling you, because we're heading out of town, I got going about Mexico and I lost my train of thought. You'll have to forgive me. I've got it a little bit on the brain right now. But I stumbled across an old history lesson / story. And I just thought, you know, I want to share it. So we're going to have a history lesson. That's going to be one of the segments today. And it's just incredible parallels with today. You know, that's one of the things I love about history is as men and as people, we all think we're so much more clever than we are. We think that we have found the fix to things, right? We think that we're attacking it from a different angle. We think that we've come up with a new idea. One of my favorite Bible verses in Proverbs talks about you know, the old catchphrase that Solomon said was, there's nothing new under the sun. And so it's amazing to me how we as human beings always, it's new. We found it. We got a whole new spin on it. We got a new idea. No, you don't. It's all been done before. Yeah, maybe there's some different trappings. Maybe there's a few different little details here or there. But give or take, there's nothing new under the sun. Anyway, so have a little history lesson I'm excited to share with you guys. And then also had an interesting couple conversations with clients and prospective clients. And we did a segment all the time, client questions. And I think we got away from it just because there was too many other things to talk about. But anyway, had the same question come up multiple times, and I thought it was fascinating. It was one that kind of stopped me in my tracks a little bit. And it was, Zach, what is your greatest fear? When you look out there at the world economy, you look at the U.S., what is your greatest fear? And I thought, you know, that's interesting. I haven't really thought about that. Hopefully you guys have gotten the vibe that I'm not a very fearful guy. You know, I think caution should be exercised at times, certainly, especially in this business when you're managing other people's money. But not too fearful. Don't really believe in it as a strategy or plan. And quite honestly, I think a lot of times it's, you know, we're making mountains out of molehills. But there are things out there that really concern me deeply. And I've expressed that on the show multiple times. At pretty much every show, we talk about other things that are concerning just because we have these anomalous, crazy things going on in the world of finance and government and investing. But do you have a fear? And if so, what is it? So I want to share that with you guys because it kind of sent me down a path. I thought, you know, I hadn't really thought about that. So anyway, want to share that with you guys. And you're probably sitting there going, well, Zach, and I, they're getting into another client conversation before we get really into the market update here. Another couple comments that I thought were funny is, you know, clients, or actually new prospective clients, happened like two or three times in the last 2 weeks where they said, you know, well, you're the really bearish guy that thinks everything's falling apart. And I went, I hope that's not the message we're conveying. Because again, it's not a message of fear or freaking out. What I've said to you all the time, you know, we had our concerns about markets and trends from last year. We had plenty of concerns, and I said it on the show and warned and cautioned and told people that they were probably too overexposed to tech. But if you think back to it, I also said, look, we don't sell everything. We're not trying to time things perfectly. What we do want to do in these situations, though, when we've got historically overvalued markets, which we do, and to be fair, it's been like that for about 3.5-4 years now, right? And we've said it before, too. Overvalued markets are not indicators. They're very bad at timing. Markets can stay overvalued for very long periods of time. But then we look for telltale signs, slowdowns in economies and things like that. And we very much believe there is a time where we should be more exposed to risk assets or stocks. The new term, I love it. We get all these new, you know, this vernacular, right? And these new terms, buzzwords. And the one that's really taken root over the last few years is risk assets, risk on, risk off. But anyway, you hear people talking about risk assets, talking about pretty much anything that's, you know, junk bonds, stocks, things like that, commodities. So we very much believe in managing that risk exposure, right? Know your risk radio, risk management. You're going to hear us talk about that all the time. You're probably going to get sick of it. But that's what the whole game is. And we're into managing risks. We're not in trying to predict where markets go. But market conditions become risks themselves. For instance, when you see things go parabolic, when you see things going on a trend line, it's moving up, and then all of a sudden that trend line starts shooting vertically, when that happens, nothing good happens after that. 99% of the time. Because things that go parabolic, they go down the other side just as fast, if not faster. And that's, you know, and if you want a perfect example, pick up a chart of Bitcoin over the last 4 or 5 years. But anyway, okay, so let's get in. That's kind of the layout there, kind of a little bit of rambling. Let's get into the market update. We're at a really interesting point here because, quite honestly, and I was very clear about this. Again, we didn't sell everything. We pared back our exposure in October. We really haven't added much to it. We've picked up a little bit here and there, but we're still very cautiously positioned. I mean, obviously, everything we've owned over the last, 6 weeks has done phenomenal. Everything's just shot straight up faster than it went down. And, I was really convinced that this is what we look at as a bear market rally. I'm a little less convinced now because the persistence of this upward move has been pretty big. There's pretty good breadth. At the same time, though, we got to keep everything in focus. Remember, we can't just focus on stocks and forget about everything else. Economic indicators are clearly weakening. Now, they're not weak in the United States right now, but a lot of places, and we talked about this a lot last week, virtually everywhere we look across the globe right now, we're seeing real evidence of slowdown. And for that matter, we have identified some real concerns now popping up in the United States markets. Now, I want to caveat all this with saying it's still not bad, okay? Remember, we're realists. We're not doomsdayers. We're, I hope markets keep going up. I just don't think it's going to happen, right? But that's the beautiful thing about that. And I'm kind of jumping all over the place here, but that's the beautiful thing about a risk management model. Where people go wrong in investing is when they get too dug into positions and they forget, what am I here for? I'm here to make money. I'm here to increase my wealth, right? I'm here to grow my assets. And I see it in the investing world all the time, where guys that have similar views to me, which is the world is a really screwed up place and this won't end well. All they own is gold and treasury bills and, they're betting against the market constantly and they've gotten slaughtered over the last 3 or 4 years. And, you can't play it that way either. Because what you've got to remember, and I know how attractive that is, buying into an absolute view of things is attractive because it's simple, right? It's like political ideology and how people line up with a party and they just run party line. And the answer to everything is, if you're a Republican, you're a racist, right? It's easier that way. They're able to sit their brain aside. They don't have to think about it. People do the same thing in investing. And they forget, what am I here for? This is not an ideological debate. This is about producing real life results. And part of that is limiting loss exposure, right? Limiting risk. And constantly looking at risk and seeing if it's appropriate. But you can't get ideologically done in. And if you want a great example of this, go back to the interview that we did a few weeks back with Keith Weiner and Brent Johnson of the Santiago Gold Fund. We're all big fans of gold, but we understand you can't just buy gold, stick it under your mattress, and just keep your fingers crossed. Right? That's not an investment strategy. That's desperation. And regardless of what goes on in the world, the other thing we got to look at is, hey, if we can go out there and buy things at a good value, regardless of how bad the next recession is, there are companies out there that will do okay. There are companies out there that will grow. There are companies out there that will increase revenues. Right? There always is. And so we can't get too dug in ideologically. Having said that, we got to take a step back and look at what we're seeing. So one of the things that came out this week that was concerning, actually it was today, were retail sales numbers. Now, I want to caveat this with, we have to approach this with balance. Our job is to get it right. We don't want to suffer from confirmation bias, right? Which was where, if you're a hammer, everything you see in the world looks like a nail. If we think the whole world's about ready to come apart, we're going to grab on to any piece of data that we think reinforces that view. But what do we actually need to do? We need to gather up all the data and look at it in an unbiased way and be honest, right? And if it takes us a different way than what we're thinking, right? And you know you're doing it well, because if you're practicing that, if you're really looking at the data, if you're not living ideologically, on a fairly regular basis, you should have your mind changed. That's just a great way to know, you know, if you're being open-minded, if you're really trying to get it right. Because getting it right and being right are two different things. And we have to constantly keep... I was hammering our analyst about that. Great guy. And it wasn't that he wasn't doing it, but I was just telling him, look, just look at the data. Don't extrapolate. Don't suffer from confirmation bias. Right? Just look at the data. So a really big piece of data that came out today were the retail sales numbers. And they were bad. They were bad. Retail sales numbers, I believe, were down 1.2 or 1.6%. And that is the biggest drop year over year since 2009, in the height of the financial crisis. Now, we got to throw some caveats in here. Here's where the information. There's a couple things. Now, here's what's let's start here. Here's what's concerning about that. Okay, first and foremost, 70% of our economy is consumer based. Okay, so consumer transactions and people buying things, that makes up 70% of our economic activity. So that's very important. Okay. The other thing that is concerning about that number is it just so happens to marry up with delinquencies on car loans running to, I believe, 9-year highs, going back 9 years. Okay. And then also student loan debt delinquencies climbing to a level we haven't seen in quite a while. Those are concerning things. And those are things you want to keep an eye on. Those are pre-recessionary type indicators, meaning those are things that we would expect to see heading into a recession. Okay. Having said that, the other issue we've got, and I think there are a multitude of reasons, and there's probably too many to even discuss on this show, but the other thing that we've got to consider is how intertwined the stock market and the economy have become. There was an old adage when I was growing up in the industry, and I remember as a kid, which is the market isn't the economy, which is true. But that is less true today than it's ever been. And a lot of it has to do with what we refer to as the financialization of the economy. Again, I can't get into it right now because we've discussed it on the show before. And that alone is we could spend an entire show just discussing what we call the financialization of the economy. But now that I'm saying that, let me give you just a basic idea. OK, when we look back to the 1950s and we look at U.S. household wealth. It was 90%, 88%, something like that, of household wealth were real assets, meaning gold, money, CDs, things like that, right? U.S. government bonds, real assets, okay? We look at today, and it's almost exactly the inverse. 93% of U.S. household wealth is financial assets, so meaning stocks, options, corporate bonds, things of that nature. So, just think about capital gains alone, right? And the funding of the government. In a year where the stock market is up 20%, you're going to see a surge in tax receipts, right? That alone. Just because so much more of the economy, so much more of the wealth in our country is tied up in financial assets. Now, how intertwined have the market and the economy become? We don't know. We're only going to be able to figure that out in hindsight, honestly. But we just know that they are much more intertwined than they used to be. So when we see the worst December since 1931, I believe, it wouldn't surprise me if that's all it was. Okay, and the other thing is you got a president, right or wrong, who's made the stock market a main push and a main indicator, a main report card of his policies. So when you take all that into consideration, we could look back on that retail sales number and say, oh, it was just a blip, because it was shockingly bad. The other thing that was, now remember, I told you the couple things that jived with it, right, which was car loan delinquencies, student loan delinquencies, and new home sales, right, that was all consistent with a pre-recessionary type situation. What wasn't, though, was job growth. Okay, now job growth is a trailing indicator, right? We got to keep that in mind. But what I'm saying is there's plenty of counterbalance type scenarios to where it's something we're keeping an eye on, but we don't want to freak out about it. But that number is interesting, and it's something that we really need to keep an eye on. And I think it is by far the most important thing that happened this week. Other than that, markets, the other thing that's interesting that we're keeping an eye on is 2750 here at the for the S&P really is the line in the sand. And we're not huge technical guys. You guys know this. You know, we don't determine what we invest in or how we invest in it based on technicals, but it's something that we look at. And for those of you home gamers out there that don't know what technicals are, it's just looking at patterns and charts. Okay? And you've heard it. The Online Trading Academy here through the radio station, that's a technically based trading program. Okay? And it's not voodoo. It works. I've just always looked at it and said, okay, technical analysis should help us determine when to buy or sell something. I've never wanted it to determine what I buy and sell, if that makes sense. But that being said, we're at this 2750 to 2780 level on the S&P, and that just happens to mirror perfectly the previous breakout level that happened in 2017. And then we fell off a little bit. Maybe it was the end of 2016, 2017. We hit 2780, I want to say, is what that peak was. Anyway, at this level, at 2750 to 2780, what you've got on the S&P 500 right now, so we hit that level, let's see here. Yeah, 2783 was on March 11th, 2018. So not quite as far back as I thought, okay? So that was the previous peak. We had a little bit of a failure there. And then we resumed that upward, that crazy run we had. Let's make sure on those dates. No, excuse me. That peak was at January 16th, 2018. Then we got hit, right? Remember the blow up at the beginning of the year last year when the volatility complex blew up? Hey, that was those January highs. Then we got hit hard. We were down 10%. And then we rallied back to get up to a closing high of 2940 on the S&P. Now, bear with me here. I know this stuff is kind of laborious, but I want to just prove a point and tell you what something we're watching here. So now we've climbed back to 2753. Okay, so that previous high, so between this area of 2750 and 2850, is that previous high level that was set back in January, okay? And what you've got here is a setup of what we call a heads and shoulders pattern, which is notoriously bearish. It's just, it's one of the worst technical indicators you can get for something. And that's, and what's interesting is we've been racing until we've hit that, this 2750 area on the S&P, and we've stalled out. So that's something to keep in mind. And again, it doesn't tell us one way or the other, but we want to be cautious of these things. We want to be conscious of these things. And here's why technicals matter. You know, if you're one of those guys out there, oh, technicals don't matter. Look, I understand that point of view. And to some degree, I share it. But the thing that we've got to keep in mind, and it's one of the reasons that we added an algorithmically managed portfolio to our suite of offerings that we offer our clients, is because high frequency trading programs run almost exclusively on technical analysis, reading charts, and they're also reading media headlines and things of that nature. But technical analysis is a big underlying and an underpinning of that. Now, then we take a step back and consider that 90% of the daily trading volume that happens on the New York Stock Exchange is algorithmically driven. Okay, so 90% of the stocks and 90% of the transactions and 90% of the trades are adhering to technical analysis in some way, shape, or form. So we have to be conscious of it. It can dictate moves. It can dictate market direction. And like I said, it's not definitive, but why we're keeping an eye on this is a really ugly chart. It's notoriously a very bearish sign. So now we take a step back. What does it mean? Not much, guys. It just means that we still are, you know, an extraordinarily overpriced market. There are reasons for that, right? It's not, there are many differences between right now and 2000. There are many differences between right now and 1929. There are a lot of similarities too, though. And it's something that we got to keep an eye on. So anyway, we've gone on and on here in the opening segment. It might be one of our longest. We got to wrap things up. But as always, if you want a deeper level of thought, you want a deeper level of, you know, thinking about this kind of stuff and analyzing it and making sure that you've got a risk managed approach, making sure you're getting compensated for all the risk you're taking, making sure that you're not sitting there on a portfolio that still isn't making money even in years when the market's up, you know, 24%. Because your advisor's using a bond portfolio that's going to get drilled and has been a horrible underperformer. If you're interested in these things that we're talking about, give us a call, 866-779-RISK. Again, 866-779-RISK. You can go to the radio show website at knowyourriskradio.com. You can go to Bulwark Management's website. You can check out all of our information, sign up for the free newsletter. We're not going to resell your data. But take a look, guys. We've got some really compelling, you know, and the strategies that we're deploying, they continue to work. We're exposing our clients to less risk. We're, in most cases, cutting their fees by 40 to 50% and increasing performance. Everybody can benefit. Anyway, we got to run. We've gone over, but we'll be right back with that history lesson I was talking to you about. I think it's fascinating, and I think you will too. So stick with us. This is Know Your Risk Radio on AM 770 KTTH.
What does outside-the-box investing really look like? Schedule your free risk review with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management, and see a side-by-side comparison of your current portfolio versus one Zach would recommend. Schedule your free risk review at knowyourriskradio.com.
I have to tell you, what a relief for my wife and me when we got signed up for long-term care coverage. The more I learned about the fact that nearly 3 out of 4 of us will need some form of long-term care in our retirement, there are so many issues at play. For some people, they can't afford it and they become a burden on their friends and family. For others, you do have money set aside, but it wipes out everything that you've saved. And maybe most importantly, it's about having a plan so that all your children have to do is carry out your wishes. It's not a burden on them. And that's why I love the advice we got from Brian Ott and 525 Advisors. We started by going to one of Brian's free classes, and that's what I recommend you do to find out about all the different plans they offer. Brian does have a few classes coming up this month. Seats are limited, so sign up now at 525longtermcare.com. You'll get a free copy of Brian's book. Book too. Go to 525longtermcare.com, 525longtermcare.com.
Volatile markets are never fun, but it provides the opportunity to see exactly how much risk you're exposed to. Like Warren Buffett always says, when the tide goes out, you find out who's been swimming without their trunks on. Hey, it's Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital and host of Know Your Risk Radio. Chances are the defense portion of your portfolio, the bonds, got hit right along with your stocks. So what do you do? Look, safety doesn't have to mean lower returns. By using our bond replacement strategy, our clients have actually increased their returns while being insured against loss and all the while lowering their fees. Call now and get your free copy of our brand new booklet, Common Sense Investing, and learn how to protect your retirement against loss but still participate in market gains. Call 866-779-RISK. Again, 866-779-RISK. Or go to knowyourriskradio.com.
Bulwark Capital Management is a DBA of Clear Creek Financial Management, a registered investment advisor.
You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management.
All right, welcome back. And let's get into the history lesson. Now, let me set the stage because we're going a ways back. We're going to go into the early 1700s. And I've long known this story and long known about the main players involved, but I hadn't revisited it in quite a long time. And one of the things that was interesting to me is I read an article recently in many of my hours of research, and the article was comparing the Mississippi Company – which was a, well, and I'll explain exactly what it was. But, you know, think like QE on steroids. It was this strategy dreamt up by this economist. And anyway, the story is just, there's so many remarkable similarities between that scenario and what we're currently dealing with. And this is why in the beginning or the opening segment of the show on the market update, I started talking about there's nothing new under the sun, because I think when we lay this out and walk through this, I think you're going to see the irony. And remember, one of the things that we've warned you guys about was about MMT, or modern monetary theory. Get used to that terminology. You're going to hear it a lot. I think you're going to hear it regardless of which direction you go. I think you're going to hear it used to bolster things that people that listen to this radio show will like. Like infrastructure, Donald Trump, you know, proposing infrastructure spending to invest in America. You're going to hear it cited by people that are proponents of things like the Green New Deal, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Because the one thing we got to keep in mind, guys, is governments like to spend money. Okay, regardless of what, who we've got in office. You know, one of the things that really frustrates me on the political front is all of the blowback that Barack Obama got for doubling the debt. And I thought it was atrocious. But at the same time, we need to be conscious of the fact that the president before him, George W. Bush, also doubled the debt in the same amount of time. Now, granted, Obama's numbers were a lot bigger. I'm with you. I'm just saying I want to look at the facts. I don't want to live based on ideology. So anyway, the Mississippi Company. Now, let's set the scene. So this story, this history lesson starts in the early 1700s. And this is a period of time that is obviously rife with issues for France, right? We have the French Revolution that takes place shortly after ours and got way worse and way crazier and way more offbeat. You know, people are getting their heads chopped off and the guillotines and all that kind of stuff. So I don't want to spend too much time talking about that. But it all basically had to go back to Louis XVI and his overspending. Or excuse me, maybe it was Louis XV. Anyway, you got to forgive me here. I've got a lot of stuff running around the dome here. But, you know, one of the biggest things was building the Palace of Versailles. They went into tons of debt to do that. Racked up ridiculous amounts of debt. And France was in a bad way. And they tried to confiscate gold to make it better. They tried to mix in cheaper metals, you know, kind of like Rome's. Think about, you know, Romans clipping the coins. They tried all the usual tricks. And nothing was working. Economy continued to get worse. People are more and more unhappy. Inflation starts spinning out of control. And then a brilliant economist, right? Just think about this, right? They're like the modern shaman. They're the modern priests of the day. They've got the magic capabilities, right? So the brilliant young economist named John Law, a Scotsman, comes to France and he you know, starts hobnobbing with the powers that be, and he tells them, "Look, you guys are doing all this wrong. You got to print money. This is your problem. You're constrained by actual gold and coinage, and so you just got to print money." And they go, "Yeah, but here we got a bigger issue though, because we've got all these debts. We can't just print money or the inflation's going to get worse. We can't pay the debts off." And he goes, no, look, you're not properly using your assets, right? Now, think about that. If you listen to a lot of the Federal Reserve rhetoric over the last 10 years, you know, we got more tools in the toolbox. We've got more things we can take advantage of, right? Remember, nothing new under the sun. And he says, "Here, look at these resources you have around the world, these colonies." And you had the East India Company, which was one of their, it was a big holding, a big monopolistic company in France. And they go, "Look, here's what we need to do. We need to take all the interest we've got in these colonies, namely the United States colonies with Louisiana. After all, Louisiana's already named after our king, right? Louis, which is where the name of Louisiana came from. If you didn't know, now you do. And Mississippi. And we got, and this is the new promised land, right? So what we're going to do, and essentially, I'm leaving some of these things out for the sake of brevity, but essentially what we're going to do is we're going to take all that interest and we're going to wrap it into a new company called the Mississippi Company. And then what we're going to do is we're going to take all of our debt that we've accumulated and we're going to move it to the balance sheet of the Mississippi Company. Okay? And we're going to help pay that debt down by the shares in the Mississippi Company that we're going to sell to the unsuspecting public out there. And they go, well, why will they buy it? Well, they'll buy it because they've got a hand in the game. They're going to get a piece of all of these gold mines that we're going to discover and all this money that we're going to make, and it's going to be fantastic. And then because we own a big piece of it and we no longer have debt, we'll be able to issue currency unfettered. We'll get everything back on we're just going to just manipulate some of the financials here. Think shareholder maximization plan or shareholder value maximization plan. So they go through, they do this. And many of you have heard of the tulip bubble. If you haven't, that's another classic story of one of the first recorded financial bubbles. But as one would expect, for a moment in time there, it worked phenomenally. They get all the debt off the balance sheet. The currency starts to appreciate. The people are rich. And the people and the shares of the company are going up at such a drastic pace that the investors that were there trading, they had an open-air trading forum at that time in Paris. And the investors that were trading, the ones that did well, the ones that bought in there earlier, they started to be referred to as millionaires. That's where the term millionaire came from, was from the Mississippi Company bubble. Now, here's the problem. Were those holdings, were those things real? Yeah, they had holdings here in the United States. They had colonized areas outside of the United States. There was some value. But it was, you know, I mean, it was all undeveloped. At that time, Louisiana was just a swamp, right? So the value they were pushing, and like I said, there's a lot more intricacies of the story that we don't have time here to get into. But it was just another version of quantitative easing. It was just another version from moving debt over here to this and making it look good and feel good and issue more debt. And it was about getting outside the constraints of fiscal responsibility. And in that way, it just completely mirrors. And you probably don't even need to hear the rest of the story. But eventually, and it started literally with one investor. He walks into the bank that was also started because they had to build a new banking system for this new beautiful scheme that John Law, the Scotsman, that he started. Banks are always in these stories, right? Banks always are going to play a role. It's amazing. But this investor goes into the bank and he goes, look, we've had a great run here. I've made a ton of money. I want to swap out my shares for gold. Right? After all, this is gold-backed, right? Because that's what they told him. So they gave him his gold. Well, everybody saw him leaving with gold, and what did it do? It started to run on the bank. And they didn't have anywhere near. They had one-fifth the amount of gold to cover their liabilities. And so literally in a matter of days, the whole thing starts falling apart. And then they had a couple different, you know, efforts to save it. They were unsuccessful, of course, and it ultimately culminated in the prince. It's very Machiavellian, too. The prince, John Law, the guy who fixed all the problems and turned France around, he ended up having to dress up like a woman to escape Paris alive because the people wanted him strung up. And the interesting thing is that think about dividend payments. So you don't have... You know, you didn't have the internet, obviously, back then. You didn't have computers. One of the main ways you made money on an investment was through dividends. And the dividend level, when the Mississippi Company reached its climax, the dividend level was virtually identical to the dividend level that's being paid on the S&P 500 right now. Now, again, I think that was a funny correlation. I am not saying that the S&P 500 is the same situation. There's not. It's very overvalued on a historical basis, but there's a lot more value there, obviously. I just thought that was an interesting correlation and just proof that, right, history repeats itself. And keep that in mind when you're listening to this talk. And like I said, you're going to hear more and more and more of it. But modern monetary theory and how we can't go broke if we can print our own money, because we'll just print our money and pay off our obligations. This has been done before. And it hasn't just been through fake metal like the Romans used. You know, they making the, you know, mixing in other kinds of metal and coating it in gold. That was one of the tricks they pulled to save money, obviously. But this was even more elaborate. John Law was the economic master wizard at the time. And he traveled all around Europe and he'd learned from the best and the brightest. And we had to get to fiat currency because then we're not constrained. But it always ends the same. This will too. Now, the world is a much more complex place now. And so the timeline on this could take a lot longer. Who knows? Nobody knows. But the scary thing to me is we're reaching these maximization points. We're reaching these points where something's gonna break. Right? The debt levels have completely spun out of control. We have the Fed supposedly in the strongest economy that we've seen in the last 60 years. We have the Fed that can't even raise rates above 2.5% because the market starts to implode. Mortgages go from 3.25 up to 5%. Historically really cheap. Home sales plummet. And we've talked about that too. It's not the rate, right? It's the rate of change. Your 30-year money goes from 3.25 to 5.1 or 5.2, whatever it is. That's a 70% increase on interest expense. If you don't think that that's going to have an impact on the real estate market, I got a bridge to sell you. And you're watching all of these things culminate. And look, we're not the crazy part about the whole scenario is that I've said it many times. We're the cleanest dirty shirt. You think what we've got going on here is crazy? You should go take a trip to China. Right, it's us on steroids. And we've talked plenty about that as well. But the importance of historical context. There is nothing new under the sun. When the answer is we can print, and it's heralded. Oh, it's beautiful. We're no longer constrained. Oh, we've figured it. You figured nothing out. It'll matter. And it won't matter till it does. That's the sad part. Is you know we're going down that path, because why not? We've already debased our currency. You know, you print $4 trillion out of thin air and use it to stabilize the economy. You're already doing it. You know, at that point, what's another trillion? What's another $5 trillion? What does it matter? But it'll end the same way. And that's why we got to be students of history. And that's one of the reasons that we build our portfolios the way we do. That's one of the reasons that we started 6-7 years ago pivoting away from bonds and portfolios. When interest rates hit zero, how do you know it's a good time to sell bonds? When rates hit zero, which they did. Why? Because you got no more upside left. Bonds make money when interest rates drop. They lose money as interest rates rise. And sitting there right now in this environment, again, using history as an example, using the period of 1968 to 1985, where if you own bonds, you got absolutely slaughtered. Couldn't sell a bond fund. But everybody's gone to sleep on that because rates have been going down for 40 years. I thought that rates hitting zero and then starting to go up would wake people up. It's not. The pain hasn't gotten to a big enough level. Will people do that at some point? You bet they will. When they start looking at 5, 7, 10% quarterly losses in their bond portfolio, they will. But right, people don't typically make decisions in anticipation of pain. They make them once they feel the pain. And so what we're sitting here trying to tell you is one of the easiest things you can do is replace that bond portion of your portfolio with our bond replacement strategy, which has no fees, which is insured against loss, and which is indexed to the market. So when the market goes up, you go up with it. When the market drops, you stay flat. It gives us way more upside. It protects way better against our downside. And it's the only financial asset you're going to own that's guaranteed against loss. At some point, that's going to be important, guys. But in the meantime, you're going to make way more money and pay way less fees than you are with bonds. And there's nothing magic about bonds, guys. They're just considered safer than equities. So if we can get something safer than bonds that pays us more and costs us less, hello. And if that's something that interests you, which it should be, getting safer, making more money and paying less in fees, give us a call. 866-779-RISK. Again, 866-779-RISK. It's not snake oil. You've heard the Dory Monson ads. He's a client of ours. He wouldn't be repping us if it was snake oil. Just enlighten yourself. Learn what's out there. Ask us questions. You don't have to call. You don't even have to meet with us. You can just email. We can email back and forth. But educate yourself. Know what's out there. Know that there are better ways to prepare for what's inevitable. It's coming. And it might be right around the corner. I don't know. There's a lot of, like I said earlier, there's a lot of things that look really concerning. There's a lot of things that don't. So it's hard to know. But when you combine those concerning things with where valuations are and what markets have done over the last decade, I think it's a good time to be cautious. Especially if being cautious means that we're far safer and we're going to make more money. So anyway, if that interests you, give us a call. 866-779-RISK. Again, 866-779-RISK. Go to the radio show website, knowyourriskradio.com. You can go to Bulwark's website. You can Google us. Watch the videos on our website that tell you more about what we do and who we are. The white paper by Roger Ibbotson in there, 16 pages, written by a PhD from Yale economist about our bond replacement strategy. Anyway, got to wrap it up. We'll be right back with our last thought, My Greatest Fear. It will be our closing segment. Stick with us. We'll be right back. This is Know Your Risk Radio on AM 770.
This is Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham. Listen to Zach uncover the truth about the financial markets with simple and honest advice to help you plan for retirement. Get your free copy of Zach's new booklet, Common Sense Investing. Go to knowyourriskradio.com.
Volatile markets are never fun. But it provides the opportunity to see exactly how much risk you're exposed to. Like Warren Buffett always says, when the tide goes out, you find out who's been swimming without their trunks on. Hey, it's Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital and host of Know Your Risk Radio. Chances are the defense portion of your portfolio, the bonds, got hit right along with your stocks. So what do you do? Look, safety doesn't have to mean lower returns. By using our bond replacement strategy, our clients have actually increased their returns while being insured against loss and all the while lowering their fees. Call now and get your free copy of our brand new booklet, Common Sense Investing, and learn how to protect your retirement against loss but still participate in market gains. Call 866-779-RISK. Again, 866-779-RISK. Or go to knowyourriskradio.com.
Bulwark Capital Management is a DBA of Clear Creek Financial Management, registered investment advisor.
You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management.
All right, we are back. Thank you for sticking with us. And I hope I didn't skip over. I was just thinking back. I was trying to sum up a really big, long story in that story about France and the Mississippi Company. And I hope I didn't skip over it. But the inevitable conclusion was, like I said, there was that run on the bank. Everybody realized their shares are worthless. And all the millionaires at the time, you know, were, you know, real value. Things went back to their intrinsic value, which was, you know, virtually nothing. So and during break. And if it wasn't so ridiculous, it'd be more funny. But, you know, I'm going to bring Darren here. Hey, so I don't know if you saw this, but Amazon is now canceling putting the place in New York, right? And as part of that deal, somehow, and I'm not sure about the particulars, I didn't really care to look into it, but the Amazon was going to funnel $3 billion to New York in some way, right? That was going to be kind of the, I don't know if they paid it over time or whatever. And so Amazon moving in there meant a $3 billion windfall for that area. So they just interviewed Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez about Amazon backing out of the deal, and she goes, that's fine. We know how to invest that $3 billion better than Amazon does. And I, based on what, right? Like
eliminating cows.
I apparently, or air travel. Now the most funny part about it This was the most humorous part about it. This woman is just makes a mockery of herself. There is no $3 billion. If Amazon isn't moving there, there is no $3 billion. She doesn't even get that. These people are actually running our country. And I mean, I know she's a junior congresswoman, but you just, the lack of shame, right? You can't shame anybody for anything anymore, right? And I don't want you to misinterpret what I'm saying. You know, I'm not saying we should be running around shaming anybody, but the only thing you can't do in society anymore is tell somebody that they're doing something wrong, right? It's the only thing you can't do, right? And it's the removal of shame of any kind. And I actually think that's scary because I think shame actually provides to be pretty good guardrails in society, right? We have a reduction of, look at STD rates, right? If you tell people to be more modest, not sleep around as much, you get a reduction in STD rates. There's pregnancies out of wedlock and all these things that are beneficial for society. You take the shame off of it, though, and, you know, it's one of the things we talk about on the show all the time. We don't know everything, but if there's something we don't know, we'll tell you we don't know and we'll go figure it out. But that's just gone. Just stand up there and, whatever I think, I'll just spew it out there because, first of all, the people that vote for me aren't, they're just as dumb and don't understand history or economics. But you'd think an elected official would be more careful. But, we're talking about the same person that introduced the Green New Deal, too. So I don't know. Anyway, and this is kind of one of the things I'm telling, look around, guys. I mean, there's just, we've just crossed the Rubicon into madness on so many levels. And I'm just telling you, on a historical basis, it's not a good sign. It's just not. But anyway, let's get into, and I thought it was a compelling thought exercise. I hadn't really thought about it in these terms. But like I said, I was asked multiple times, what's your biggest fear? What are you the most afraid of? And I thought about this and I spent some significant time thinking about it. And you know what I think my biggest fear is? My fear is what I know in my gut and I know in my psyche, the inevitable outcome. Now, if that sounds weird, let me explain. Right? We were just reading about the Mississippi bubble. We were sitting there saying that, look, things return to their intrinsic values. Okay, they just do. It's one of those, it's like a law, it's an immutable law of gravity, which is why being a quote unquote value investor is important, right? We got the underlying value, what we pay for an investment is one of the most defining characteristics of how that investment will perform. But I remember thinking about it and thinking, I guess I'm sitting here saying that this inevitably will end in tears. And that's my greatest fear, is that these banks can't control it. These central banks can't control it. Because the excesses built up are so big. And when they lose control, when the economic devastation is going to be unlike really anything we've ever seen, just because the excesses are. And then I started thinking about how that really informs my outlook on the economy and investing in general. And, I'd be far more comfortable being the last guy on earth that foolishly believed debt, balance sheets, and valuations actually mattered. And what I mean by that is, if they're proven to be right, and they can control it ad infinitum, and modern monetary theory works, and I'm proven horrifically wrong. And by the way, I like my odds in that debate. I just don't see that. But is it possible? Sure, anything is possible. I've lived long enough to know that. But I always think, and I think this is one of the things that we need to think about as investors, is we need to think about all the possible outcomes and we need to invest in accordingly. And that's one of the biggest holes I see in the way that portfolios are built and money is managed. And what I mean by that is I'm sitting there going, look, we have these range of possible outcomes. Which ones can we stomach? And based on what we can stomach, we should invest accordingly. Right? And what I'm saying is, if I'm proven wrong, I can live with the idea of being the last idiot on earth that actually didn't think we could print our way to prosperity and actually thought debt and value and balance sheets mattered. I can live with that. But what I cannot live with, the outcome that I cannot live with, is the one that's got to look at his investors and say, look, I believed that money printing could fix everything. I believed it was a party that would never end. And that's why your accounts lost 85%. And it makes me nervous, guys, because the number one, it's amazing to me how psyches have changed. And being in this industry and building our company up, especially over the last 5 years, but being in the industry for as long as I have, which is, you know, officially 2004, I want to say. So what are we at now? 15 years? Jeez. I'm starting to feel old. Anyway, but being in the industry as long as I have, you know, I've seen the different cycles play out. I managed money through 2008, 2009. We've seen everything that's gone on in the last decade and all this, you know, all the madness and craziness and the way that the world has changed. But what I've seen is the investor psyche switch over the last 5 years, watching people get less and less concerned, kind of believing the myth more and more and more. And recently, in the last 3 months, even despite the market drop, one of the things that's really caught me off guard is it's really reached a zenith level. We sit there talking about risk and risk exposure, and the number one thing that I sit down with new people and talk about is they want to make more money. They feel like they're missing out. The animal spirits are running wild. And the thing that I fear of is that typically the retail investors are the last ones to get on board, and they end up holding the bag. And, you know, I suspect that this time will be no different. And so what we're trying to tell people is we're saying, look, the traditional way that a portfolio was built was not designed for this system that we're currently in. And it's not efficient either. And if you want to know what I mean, go look at what you've made in bonds, the bond portion of your portfolio over the last 5 years versus what you've paid out in fees. And what you'll see on average is that you would have done far better in a CD. And that should be all the proof people need, but it's not for some reason. And so getting into what my biggest fear is, sadly, my biggest fear is what's, you know, the inevitability. Because, and look, and I don't have a timeline. I'm not trying to scare you. Like I said, I'm really an optimistic guy. I'm not a pessimist. But we're on a train right now, and that train has left the station, and we're miles down the track. And once you've opened this Pandora's box of central banks printing money, I mean, look, we have one 20% drawback and the Fed pulls off their rate hikes. That's crazy. But they know they got to keep the game going. And if you're not properly prepared, guys, if you're sitting there looking at that bond portfolio, coming to the same realizations we're talking about right now, realizing that you're overexposed, realizing that your safety net in your portfolio shouldn't be debt in a world that's drowning in debt, give us a call. 866-779-RISK. Again, 866-779-RISK. You can call and talk to me directly. You can email with me. We can set up a meeting. We can talk over the phone consultation. Inform yourself. This isn't about running and hiding. This is about risk management, making sure we accomplish your retirement goals, and doing it while making more upside, paying less in fees, and taking way less risk. Anyway, we got to run. Have a wonderful week. We'll be back at the end of next week. Until then, safe travels. This is Know Your Risk Radio on AM 770 KTTH.
Thanks for listening to Know Your Risk Radio. Whether it's preservation of capital or an aggressive growth strategy, every investor needs a clearly defined risk profile. Schedule your free risk review at knowyourriskradio.com. Tune in next week to Know Your Risk Radio with your host, Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management.